Here's Higdon, it sits up nicely for Michael Higdon! And what a start for Motherwell! But here's Malt, and he goes for it for Sutton! Magnificent Malt! Stephen Robinson celebrates! Motherwell, 2-1! Could that be the goal that puts him into the Betfred Cup final?
He's got Irwin. The supporting links from Ainsworth on the angle. Lionel Ainsworth fires home.
It's Lasley deep into stoppage time. Up goes Sutton. No foul given. Kerr and Reid is there to knock it in. The goal is given. Hesitation for Craig Reid, who scores his first ever goal in senior football. And what a moment for Motherwell.
Hello and welcome to the MSC podcast. Since the last time we recorded, Scotland have ended a 22-year wait for the qualification to our major championships. And we've had a game against St Johnstone, and then we're condemned to another game against St Johnstone. We're going to go over that, myself, Scott and Andy tonight. Guys, welcome along.
How are you doing?
That was a good time in there, guys. You've managed to both unmute your microphones in about 10 seconds and then speak at the same time. Good to have you on. Scott, I'll start with yourself. This St Johnstone on Saturday, a 1-1 draw. Very much your typical St Johnstone versus Motherwell game, a scrappy affair. We got our noses in front with a really well-worked team goal. But after that, it was hard work, really. Silly penalty to concede. Bevis McGabby, nowhere really near Stevie May. Brings him down inside the box. May converts the penalty. There was a few chances as the game went on, but nothing really of note. I think in the end, possibly given the performance levels, quite happy to get out with a point.
I certainly didn't think that we deserved to win the game, but I think in summing it up as well, Robinson said that probably St Johnstone didn't really merit the victory, which was, I suppose, is quite a fair assessment of the game, but it really was dreadful. It's frustrating as well because of the international break, you can never look forward to the games a wee bit more, and then to get that kind of disappointment of the kind of lacklustre performance. But as you say, it's a kind of a usual performance at McDermott Park. The great goal, O'Hara, as I said in the last time we recorded, I've been really impressed with O'Hara, probably more so at centre-half, but it just shows you how vital he is to the team. I think he believes in his own hype because I'm touting himself for the Scotland squad, but I think that was maybe misquoted more than anything else. But going to their penalty, I feel every time with Bevis McGabby in the team, for one good thing he does two stupid things, and he's always got a mistake that's going to cause a goal. I'd love to be able to sit and go through every single game that he's played where he's either caused penalties, sent off, caused goals. He's done all right in a couple of games, but for me, he hasn't the quality that were needed. I know they were thin in the ground, and even more so with what happened with Alan Campbell and Barry Maguire, so therefore he was probably flung into it. But I really, every time that he's on the ball, it's a kind of, oh no, what's he got to do now with it? Maybe I'm being a bit harsh, but as I said, I'm not saying that he's the worst centre-half we've ever had, but that penalty, I mean, he was never ever got to win the ball. It was always going to be a penalty, a stonewall as they come. And I can't see him getting dropped for Saturday. But that's just me. I think I've always been like that with McGabby. I just don't rate him at all.
Andy, of course, we were dealt a blow prior to kick-off. David Turnbull tested positive for COVID-19. And as a result, all of those that were in close proximity during Scotland under-21s games against firstly Croatia and then Greece, having to be ruled out and gone to isolation for 14 days. So two players that have been playing a big part, particularly Campbell, ruled out for two big games. That certainly caused selection headaches. Robbie Crawford comes in, and I thought he did reasonably well. It was a pretty quiet performance from him, but he certainly didn't work out his depth on his first start for the club. Maguire, I actually spoke to a few people about this before the game. Now, I think Barry Maguire's been booked in every game since he came into the team. He's not quite the finished article, but I think he was enjoying his most consistent run of first team starts. To have that momentum taken away from him is really disappointing. And then, in Alan Campbell, you've got the heartbeat of the team, really the engine room of the team as well. So, two big losses, and that certainly did play a part in the 90 minutes that transpired from there.
Yeah, it certainly wasn't helped. I think with what appears to be the lateness of the information coming through to the club, or all of the clubs involved, hasn't been helpful at all. It clearly gave them no opportunity to make preparations, or little or no preparations, with the two players concerned to be factored out. The Mugabe selection, you've got essentially then you're talking about one player coming back from injury or a second player coming back from injury that have missed games for the central defensive position and then midfield. You know, moving O'Hara forward was the kind of the obvious kind of choice there, alongside the introduction of Crawford as well. And as you said, Crawford did fairly well for a kind of a first start, I think it was, for him. So, but in terms of the result, for me, I think any away game you go to in the league, if you come back with at least a draw, then it's not the worst afternoon's work. And we take what we can from that. Another game undefeated in the road. I think Celtic apart, that the only game we've lost away from home out with the Old Firm so far, I think, is Ross County in the opening day with a daft penalty we gave away and missed. So our kind of results, if not always performances, seem to be fairly decent standard away from home, and that carried on Saturday there. So another point, move on. Unfortunately, it's the same team again that we're facing this week, but different dynamic, of course, with it being a cup tie, being back at Fir Park, and you know there's going to be one or two players involved that weren't previously, and one or two that are going to be absent. So we'll see how Saturday goes.
Scott, it was a game of pretty few talking points. One thing I did notice was a wee bit of, I don't want to say criticism, just a wee bit of confusion, I guess, surrounding Stephen Robinson's substitutions. Devante Cole, for me, was the best of the three players playing up top. He was substituted for Chris Long. Long then is injured within 10 minutes. He's replaced by Ricky Lamy, so it looks like we're trying to shore things up at the back. And then with 3 minutes to go, we introduce a striker in Jordan White. I couldn't really make sense of it. I don't know whether Devante Cole is quite 100% fit. He went off against Livingston in the first half, but he did return for the Celtic game. I don't know whether it was tactical or whether it was maybe just to preserve the legs out of Devante Cole, who spent quite a bit of time out the game and obviously joined up with the club quite late on in the transfer window as well, so he's missed quite a bit of football.
Aye, certainly. You always feel as if as soon as the game starts, the front three are never going to end the same as it started. And I would have thought that Lang would have been the one to come off for Long. I totally agree with you. I think that since Devante Cole's been here, even in the time when he played against Celtic, he looked like our most attack-minded and creative player. And I think Tony Watts really worked off Devante Cole. If you look to the first half against Livingston when Tony Watt was really, really good. A lot of the work was created with Devante Cole, and I have been really, really impressed. But I just thought that it must have been down to fitness or injury. But unless you've got that inside information, you can only look. It didn't look injured. It didn't look unfit. It did look tactical. And I don't particularly like Lang, Watt, and Long. To me, would all prefer to play in that central role with wingers either side. And it's almost going back to the trying to fit square pegs into round holes. So I don't think it changed the game. And obviously bringing on Jordan White with a couple of minutes to go, I mean, was that then just going to be a big lump up the park for him to try and go on the end of? But at the end of the day, I think that if anybody was going to sneak the victory, it was going to be St Johnstone. And we've changed back when Long's come off and we've put Lammy on. It was just really to shore it up. I wouldn't be overcritical of it. I just prefer Tony Watt playing through the middle with Cole and another. But what I will say about the substitutes is that when was the last time Jake Casey was even in the manager's thoughts? When we've got quite a bit of injuries and stuff, he's not even getting wee cameo roles. There's no many games at all. So it shows you how much he's failed out of the manager's thoughts if he's not getting any game time. And when Seedorf comes back, when he's further than again, I think that the likelihood will be that his loan will be terminated and January, and we can maybe invest that money elsewhere.
Yeah, that's certainly been a disappointing one. I think we all agreed when he returned to the club that he would need to go off to a flying start, and that certainly didn't happen. And since then, I don't know whether he is a kind of confidence player as well, in terms of, I think, for his own sake, as well as the kind of response from the fans. He needed that positive start. He didn't get that. And as you say, since then, he's just been so far down the pecking order to the point where it wouldn't be a surprise to see him drop off the substitutes bench now, especially in a time where you can use five substitutes. If you're not getting on during the midst of a fairly substantial injury list, then I don't think your time's going to come. And it wouldn't surprise me, as you say, for that loan deal to be cut short and maybe these funds, in terms of whatever we're covering of his wages, to be reinvested elsewhere. It maybe, again, backs up the thoughts of many that the move came too soon for Jake Hastie. He had only had, a dozen first-team starts, and then there he was going to a team that had aspirations of challenging at the top end of the Premiership table for the title, and I don't think he was ready at the time, and I don't think he's adjusted to playing for one of the top clubs in Scotland. He's, let's face it, what happens when the time comes that it's the end of his contract at Rangers? I would say that he's destined for a career much further down the league, because maybe this is a bit scathing, but I just don't see. He's not going to get a regular game or any sort of game time with ourselves. He goes back to Rangers. Who then takes him on and loan? And has he got the ability to do it? I really don't know. I don't know whether we just had that purple patch with Jake Hastie where he hit the heights and then he inevitably faded away. And he's got time to make up for the poor start that he had to his career, but I just don't know whether he can recover from it.
I think you've hit the nail on the head there, in that we don't know, because basically he had 2 hour appearances at the start for us, and he's barely had any game time since. So you can't really write a player off if you haven't seen him play for so long. I mean, we changed after a few games at the start of the season. We changed our formation, so the whole purpose he was brought to the club for, we changed the whole formation. And he was then going to find it difficult to get back in. It's only latterly that we changed back to the formation where he performed at his peak first time around. But clearly at that point we've had a settled front three and he's down the kind of pecking order. So I think it's one of these ones you're going to have to give him the opportunity to play. But you know, he's not deserving of the place currently because of the players that are in that position are more than doing enough to keep those spots as it stands. So it's a case of waiting and seeing if he does get, you know, maybe it requires an injury, a suspension, someone completely going off the boil in terms of form before he's reintroduced to the team again. That unfortunately is just the way it is, but I can't say for certain that, you know, his career's going this way or that way, but simply with the fact that he's not playing, we can't really say where he goes once his kind of contract expires at Rangers. There's plenty of examples run about that you can see guys that have even left Motherwell in the first instance that went away. You know, they've got big money moves, they've went to bigger teams, but they're now kicking about the leagues with the likes of St Mirren and such like. I mean, Lee Irwin's one that immediately comes to mind as someone who had similar kind of 6 months in the first team, disappeared, went away, and he's now back at our level, having floated around about two or three other teams. There's other guys like him as well, like Stevie May, for example, who scored in a Saturday against us. He's another one. He went down south, a couple of moves down there, back up, and he's back with a similar standard a team. I'm sure he'll do, you know, exactly the same as that. He certainly doesn't appear as if he's going to do enough with the kind of form that Rangers are producing to break into that side any time soon. So you do perhaps wonder for his long-term future there, but that isn't really our concern. But for the kind of here and now, you know, I wouldn't necessarily be bombing him back in the first bus back down the motorway to Ibrox, simply because we've not seen enough of him to judge what he can actually deliver. It may well be when he's reintroduced now that we've got a formation, a style of play, players that are playing round about, players that are on form, that may enable him to produce something close to the form that he did first time around. But again, we just don't know.
But I think the reason we don't know, though, is, Andy, to be fair, is that he can't be producing it in training. Now, it's all right saying we've not seen him, but the same happened to him at his last loan, that he went down to Rotherham, started off, scored a couple of goals, and then in a League One side in England, he sat on the bench for the majority of it. So for me, there's
what happens in England is not necessarily has any bearing on what happens at somebody's career at Fir Park. I mean, there's plenty of examples, again, you can find where there's players that do it at a particular club, a particular level, and they can't transfer that to somewhere else. So, you know, fair enough, yeah, but you might not have done it particularly well over a longer term period with Rotherham, but it's the kind of here and now. And I don't know whether training comes into it or not, but I just think the circumstances are there. The change of formation, the change of personnel that we've had, he's not had the opportunity. It's one of these things when a player's out the team. You have the flip side to the kind of Jake Hasty scenario, is where someone gets better and better and better for lack of involvement simply because we haven't seen him play. And there's a flip side, which is happening with Hasty just now, is he's been written off, he's been deemed that he's not good enough. That may well be the case in time that is, but I don't see how we can say with any justification when a guy's like two-hour appearances or something and probably another half an hour as a substitute at a time where we weren't playing well ourselves, we weren't doing particularly well in terms of result-wise. I just think it's harsh if we're going to, you know, completely write him off when he's not really had that opportunity to do anything.
The NFC podcast is proudly brought to you by Manscaped, the number one in men's below-the-waist grooming, offering precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. You can get 20% off and free shipping with the code MONDEWELL at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com using the code MONDEWELL.
I've mentioned at the start, we've maybe got a bit of a shorter podcast tonight because there's not been a great deal happening. That maybe gives us the opportunity to compare and contrast a wee bit here. I guess the same people that are writing off Jake Hasty wouldn't be doing the same with David Turnbull, who isn't getting any game time at Celtic. Different circumstances, but a team that are struggling and possibly could do with that creative spark and the form that David Turnbull is capable of showing, he's not been given the opportunity as well. It's just a wee bit of a case in point in terms of players moving too soon and going to the likes of Rangers and Celtic and seeing their career been set back somewhat. Now, we've got, as you mentioned, Andy, plenty of examples of players that have moved on and seen their career suffer as a result. Of course, their bank balances certainly aren't reflecting a struggle with the lure of playing for such big clubs for very, very good money as well. Must be extremely attractive. But I can't help but feel that, almost in a similar way, Turnbull's been set back 3 or 4 months in his career at a time where he could really not afford to do so, given the fact that he'd spent a year out of competitive football through the horrendous injury that he sustained. So, well, he didn't really sustain it, did he? It was kind of a pre-existing injury that could have went undetected for the rest of his career, really. You now see him kind of dwindle away in the Celtic bench. It was quite strange even seeing him not starting for the Scotland under-21s as well. Possibly a direct consequence of the fact that he's not playing for these club teams. So, yeah, there's certainly a few examples, prominent examples of moves to the Old Firm really backfiring, or certainly backfiring in the present tense.
I think there's two different ways that you look at the points that's been made. If I quickly jump back to Jake Hasty, for him, he's completely made the right decision financially. The amount of money that he'll be making, signing on fees and stuff for Rangers, will probably, maybe not set him up for life, but will certainly give him a good start. So the way that I try to look at it is, if that was my son, even if I was a Motherwell fan, and it doesn't matter what club came in and offered you stupid money, then you're going to tell them to take it, because you're only an injury away from getting nothing. I'm not as frustrated with Jake Hasty because I never thought he was a finished article, but with David Turnbull, I'm really frustrated because for me, he was one of the most exciting players that I've seen. The way that he dominated games, the way that his coaches spoke about him, his character, everything, and all that hype with the move, they were desperate to get him. And listen, £3 million, even for Celtic, it might not break their bank, but it's quite a big signing. I've been really, really, really disappointed that he doesn't seem to be getting a chance. And now it's really, really strange in my mind is that the Celtic aren't really performing that great. So why has he not been given a couple of games in case his lining try to protect him so that he doesn't become the scapegoat, get into a kind of side that are struggling? But as Andy said, that's not that. I do want to see him succeed because I only think it will do the reputation of the Motherwell youth system well. I don't want him to come on and score goals against us, but I do want him to have a really good career just because he does generally seem like a decent guy and wanted the best for us. But as you said, I was looking at the Scotland under-21 lineup and he's on the bench and you're like, this is meant to be the next big thing for Scotland. I mean, I joked earlier on about Mark O'Hara mentioning the Scotland Euro 20 squad, but realistically, a guy like David Turnbull should be saying to myself, right, well, what else can I do here? I should be aiming to get in that squad because he's definitely good enough. Whether or not he would get in now, because I've got quite a strong midfield, but it's just it is a really canny. It's a head scratcher for both of them, but not for both of them. For Turnbull, Casey, I can completely understand, but Turnbull just doesn't seem to be getting any sort of chance at all.
No, it certainly doesn't. And I guess this couple of weeks have been able, or having to isolate, certainly won't help his cause either. Mind you, as we record, Celtic currently trailing in the Europa League, so more trouble for Neil Lennon, and maybe again that a step closer to a new manager coming in who may afford the opportunities that Neil Lennon hasn't to David Turnbull. We'll go on and talk about Saturday's Betfred Cup game, last 16 tie at Fir Park, again against St Johnstone. Andy, are you anticipating more of the same? It was a stuffy affair on Saturday. I don't really anticipate a great deal of difference in this one. They tend to be fairly low-scoring affairs. I was looking back at it for the programme, and I think it's now 5 out of the last 6 have been settled by a goal, with one game ending a draw. So you wouldn't expect a convincing victory for either side, although there has been, I guess if we go back the last kind of 8-9 years, there has been a few one-sided affairs. There was a 4-0 last season for Motherwell at Fir Park, but the kind of 1-0 for Motherwell at McDermott, a 2-1 for St Johnstone at their place in February, 1-0 for Motherwell earlier on this season, and then one each. That kind of seems to be about right for the forum book there.
Yep, you would imagine it'd be along similar lines, based on what we've seen thus far in the two games between the sides this season. Hopefully we can have a repeat of the outcome of the first league game at Fir Park. There's a kind of couple of kind of cup games that we need to avenge against St Johnstone that kind of irritate a wee bit, that live long in the mind. I think it was Mark McGee, or was it Malpass, was in charge, one of the run about that kind of era where we lost a midweek game. I think it was the Scottish Cup. And there was another one as well that sticks in my head. And when Billy Davis, not long after he took over, I think it was might have been a Scottish Cup quarter final we lost to St Johnstone. So not quite the same competition, but you know, these are things that we hope to avenge and see right, although we have had a couple of cup wins ourselves since then, against them. But it's not one, as you say, that you expect, you know, a barrel load of goals in, based on the two encounters so far. So whatever the case is, you know, how we do it, you just hope you progress. The necessity for a sterling performance is perhaps not quite there as it would be in a league encounter. You know, it's all about getting through the tie on this occasion, and let's hope we can do that by hook or by crook.
Yeah, Scott, there's certainly not a great deal to fear there, having a season kind of similar to ours, I guess. A bit stop-start. They've had a few positive results, a few not-so-good results. I think both teams are going into this game in pretty good form, though. Motherwell's only defeats coming against Rangers and Celtic in recent times. St Johnstone, I think they're now 6 or 7 without defeat, so they're looking pretty good themselves. They got a good point at Easter Road, where they led twice in the game on Tuesday night. So it's certainly not going to be easy. Again, Campbell and Maguire both missing as well. But the hope is that you've got a Devante Cole that's 1 week further on, perhaps a more commanding performance from Tony Watt, who was in really good form prior to the international break, albeit maybe had a quiet afternoon when Celtic came to Fir Park, and a game that not many impressed, it must be said. So there's plenty of positives still around this team, and to get to a quarter final, that would be another buzz that would certainly give the place a lift, despite the fact that you're perhaps pondering would be one game away from Hampden, and a game at Hampden that would be quite unlikely to be able to attend.
Certainly, is that into that? That would be the gutting, sitting in the house watching Motherwell in a semi-final. But listen, we need to get there first before we start worrying about that. But with regards to, we're obviously coming into December now. I wouldn't be surprised if there's a few changes in. I know that we're really struggling with numbers, but We've just spoke about Jake Casey. Is this a time where he's maybe going to get flung in to be given a chance? In relation to St Johnstone, I would imagine they'll be the same. They've quite a lot of games, so I think a couple of the rotation in their squad. I was really, really impressed with Ali McCann for them. I'd never heard much about him up until Saturday, but I thought he kind of controlled their game. Everything went through him. I was really, really, really impressed with him. I think the League Cup for me doesn't hold the same kind of romance as what the Scottish Cup does, but it's still good to get a wee run in the cup. I don't get as when the way I compare it is when we got to the two cup finals in that great year where we lost both. The difference that I felt for the Scottish Cup final to the Betfred final was quite a bit of difference. I don't know if it was because the European football there was, or it's just the usual kind of a apathy with the League Cup. I'm not saying I'm not up for it, but I just don't think it's got the same the same draw as what the Scottish Cup is for me. I don't know if you feel the same, or is it just me being negative?
I think the fact that it doesn't have a European spot as a prize at the end of it, it's immediately kind of down a notch or two from the Scottish Cup. But I'd be still pretty damn chuffed if we ended up and seeing it in claret and amber ribbons whenever the final comes around.
Yeah, I think the League Cup's always been one that, as you get deeper into the tournament, it holds more kind of prestige, doesn't it? If you go out in the early stages of the Scottish Cup, it's quite often feels like a season ender where we've got pretty much nothing to play for in the league, and now we're out the cup at an early juncture. So what's the point almost for 3 or 4 months? The League Cup, you get through the groups as we've had to do in the last couple of years. This season, we've got one off game at home with a chance of a quarter final at stake. You're only 4 games away from winning the cup. So I think you win on Saturday, then ultimately the League Cup becomes a much more attractive prospect and a realistic prospect at that. The kind of only caveat to that, I would say, is the fact that you've got Rangers really motoring and desperate to win that first trophy. You've got Celtic hoping to continue their run of dominance in the domestic cup. So it feels like a long time since you saw like Kilmarnock lifting the League Cup, or Ives winning the Scottish Cup, Inverness winning the Scottish Cup. So I think maybe we've kind of lost sight of the fact that the possibilities are there in the cup. It just kind of needs a relatively decent draw, and who knows, to be 2 games away from Hampden in any competition, I think it's definitely exciting. So I definitely agree in the sense that, yes, it's not as big as the Scottish Cup, but for us, I don't think we can really be too picky when it comes to the progression in cup competitions.
No, so I'm sitting here thinking, Andy, it's like probably if I go back over the last kind of 10 years, one of the moments that probably gave me the most joy was the semi-final of the League Cup, when Louis Malt scored that goal, which is obviously now Steelman Pins has captured that moment. And I suppose when you think about it like that, I think it's maybe just because it's St Johnstone at Fir Park. I don't feel completely motivated for it, if that makes sense. But when you think back to some of the moments we have had in the particularly that semi-final, I mean, I don't think that I've enjoyed a game. I mean, even the, if you go back to the playoff games against Rangers, that semi-final of the League Cup was written for the TV had already got a Rangers Celtic final, and then Louis Moult's just what a day that was. And I suppose when you think about it like that, maybe I've been a bit harsh on the League Cup, because it certainly gave us a Sunday afternoon that I'll never forget.
Yeah, there's definitely moments there, and there's moments to be had as well. I completely agree in the sense that St Johnstone has just become a fixture to almost dread, and maybe we've started to talk this up a bit too much, but it seems like our games in recent times, I would say, against St Johnstone and Livingston are absolutely dire to watch. And
I think it's just frustrating with the League Cup when you have the kind of, no, for the first time you have a farcical situation where you're rewarded, inverted commas, with a seeding that somehow means that you get stuck with another top flight team, and there's like teams with seedings below you that manage to get like home ties to like lower league teams, and you kind of think that's mental. And there's the frustration that you have another Premier League team that you look for that wee bit of difference, you know, a wee bit of freshness. We're playing somebody different in the cup. I mean, we'd all been looking for Alloa. I think Alloa's still in it, I believe. Might not be.
Right.
So we'd have been looking for somebody like that. I think, well, we've not played Alloa in the best part of 20, 25 years. Wouldn't it be great, even though we can't actually get to the game, would it be great to have something different? Not only do you have a chance of progressing, or so you would think you've got a better chance of progressing, but just somebody different. But to get somebody from your same league and somebody that you're actually playing the week before takes that wee bit of, you know, sheen off it, certainly. I mean, we had that kind of scenario in the past as well. Like, I remember there was like occasions where we'd sit Milne at, you even had it last season to a certain extent, where you had the cup tie, you had the replay, you had the league game all within the space of about 3 weeks. And I can remember a couple of instances like that with St Mirren as well, where I think we got them in the League Cup, we got them in the Scottish Cup in quite close succession, and then you had a couple of kind of league games running about it as well. So it's just a wee bit of the kind of drudgery facing the same teams so often. And especially so when you're playing them, you know, a little more than like a week apart.
I think another point to add on to it, and it's maybe, this could probably, I know we said maybe a bit shorter, but maybe I'm opening a can of worms here, but I think the fact that the club are looking for £12, now, at the end of the day, I don't have a problem paying that. £17.50 for Saturday, which I thought was shocking, but it's quite a lot of money for fans that really for sitting in your living room, and particularly with being the Motherwell stream, where the likelihood is you're going to see interrupted more, and you're checking Twitter to see if everybody else is missing it. I think that's just the whole situation is probably why I'm feeling a wee bit kind of, it's not that I'm not up for it, just a wee bit lethargic toward it, I suppose. But I think I've seen a lot of people kind of saying that you would have thought that at the club would maybe have said, right, we'll give the fans something back, we'll give them it for free. Now, I can completely understand that. I've been reading all the reports this week about clubs struggling to make ends meet and stuff, so I've not got a problem with paying the £12, but I'm in a fortunate position that my employment's not been affected. But I don't know. I just think that there's potentially, I can see why there's some fans are looking like, potentially it's only going to be a couple of months until the season ticket renewals are out, and are we going to renew again? So where does it stop? Do you know what I mean? I mean, that's virtually £30 for me to watch two games when I'm already paying X, Y and Z for Sky and BT Sport.
Well, I think there was kind of contrasting views, and I don't think there's a right or wrong side of the fence to fall on with this one, but the one thing that I would say is a wee bit of a danger almost is the fact that Motherwell have honoured, or have said that they will honour all games that were not inside the stadium for next season. They also had said that stakeholders would get the first European game or League Cup game free of charge, depending on which one came first. So I don't know what they do next season, and I don't know where the goodwill ends in terms of course, the longevity of the football club is the most significant thing. But it's a very big sum of money at the price of a season ticket just to write off. I don't know where I sit on it. I don't know whether next season it would be a case of perhaps making a donation to the Welsh Society or something like that, rather than writing off or out another £340 out season ticket that you're ultimately not going to be able to use. You haven't got use of the previous season. I think that's maybe a stretch too far. And I think the other thing, though, we have to consider is the gate receipts were always split for cup ties, so I don't know whether it'll be the same with the broadcast. And there is certainly a cost associated with having these games set up and streamed to a fairly wide audience as well. So I don't know whether it was a kind of needs-must situation.
Just each to their own, isn't it? As you say there, there's no right or wrong. Much the same, there was no fingers could be pointed if someone decided to take the reimbursement for the portion that was being made available for last season. No fingers can be pointed if you decided not to take a season ticket, even in the knowledge that your money was going to the club and you were very unlikely to actually see any footage. And similar next season when they go and sail again, nobody's going to point any fingers at you if you choose not to take up that option and decide to use the money that you would spend in other things or decide and wait and see how the land lies. It's just it's a kind of personal choice. Everybody's different. It's even as you alluded to in terms of your capacity to pay the sum that's required to see the game on Saturday. Well, it's going to be different for different people with different circumstances. So I think it is ultimately it's just a personal choice. I don't think the club, we've had similar kind of discussions before. I don't think the club are doing anything wrong in offering that facility to supporters that want to take up the option of a season ticket. They've got to keep the club running in the manner that they see best fit. We've done that way. Other clubs have decided against season tickets and kind of had fairly exorbitant prices for their pay-per-view in the past. Really just down to the individual. It's kind of unique set of circumstances, and it's really just down to the individual concerned to see how their circumstances are and how that ties in with their ability and their willingness to kind of support the club in that particular way. But there's certainly no right or wrong.
I just think there's an opportunity miss there. I think if Motherwell as a club had went out and said, we're going to give you the first European, but we've decided due to your continued support that we're also going to honour the first cup game, then I think that if it went to the next round, fans would have been more encouraged to go out and buy it. Now, I'm probably playing a bit of devil's advocate here because I will go and buy it on Saturday. I don't have an issue. I'm just meaning that I'm looking at it from my set of circumstances. But we're in another tier 4 lockdown in Lanarkshire. People are getting furloughed. I just think it would have been better, even if the club had said, we're going to open up a donation, if you want to put anything in, something like that to help cover the costs. I think more people would have been inclined to do that than, and it would have given the opportunity to other fans. I think it was a good opportunity to miss for Motherwell, in my opinion, but end of the day, I'm not in the marketing world, so I could be talking a lot of nonsense.
See, I was thinking about something the other day, one of my rare thoughts. In terms of football as a commodity and something that you invest a great deal of money in, is your passion and enthusiasm for the game as it was prior to the pandemic kicking in and affecting football? I just kind of quite often think that I do wonder whether I'll be as regular when it comes to attending football as I was previously, just because I've almost got in the habit of not going as much. And I don't know. I don't know whether it'll come to certain games and maybe be a wee bit more pick and choose in my approach to it, whether that be with away games in particular, just given the cost involved and almost kind of coming to terms with the fact that I'm able to miss it. You know what I mean? I think that while I've watched every one of our games this season, I don't think that if you were to tell me, and there will be times where I'll have a work clash as well, and I'll have to miss a game. I think I can cope with that a bit better.
I think that's certainly, personally speaking, that's been the case for me for a number of years. It was the kind of change for me came whenever I got my first house, and you're talking nearly 20 years ago. Now that was fairly traumatic, having gone from the point in terms of supporting your team, not in kind of real life traumatic. In terms of like going from, I mean, there must have been probably 6, 7, 8, 9 seasons beforehand, maybe even more, that you could probably count in one hand the number of games that I had missed home and away, and to suddenly find that your real life kicks in and you have a mortgage to pay for the first time, that you've got all the commitments that come with owning your own house and managing bills and things like that, that, you know, it simply wasn't viable for me to go to the away games that I previously did. And I always managed to scrimp and scrape and get the season ticket for the home games. That wasn't going to stop. But I had to sit and, you know, miss away games. And I remember like one of the first ones, we'd think we were Livingston away in the open game of the season. And one of my mates is texting me asking for directions and stuff like that. And I'm having to go and do the messages before the game. And, you know, you're seeing like fans of other teams getting ready. You know, getting into Parkhead. I was going up to like Coke Bridge or Asda or something like that. And you're seeing them get in. And that really bites. But as you rightly say, over time, you become accustomed to that. You miss a game here, you miss a game there. It's like, oh, well, that was in Aberdeen, so I didn't have the money to go to there anyway. Or I'm working that day, so... And you slowly but surely become accustomed to it. So I think there's definitely going to be a period of kind of readjustment to how you can support the team in comparison to how you did previously, when you've had that different set of, you know, circumstances, meaning you can't actually physically go and see them. You've been supporting from your living room or wherever else. So I think that's definitely going to be the case.
For me, the easy answer for it is that I'll just jump straight back to where I was. I'm dying to get back to the football and dying to get home and away. But the example that I'll give is that I don't think I've ever been as animated and as nervous in my living room as I was for the Scotland game. At one point, I was like literally had the cushions on my face watching it, and I just thought, what would that be like if I was at that game? And I thoroughly enjoyed the drama of it all. But she been given the chance to experience that. As we spoke a wee while ago there about potentially Motherwell getting into a semi-final, and I mentioned the Louis Moult game. Can you imagine how... It's almost like, again, going back to the saying, a double-edged sword. We all want it, but how gutted would you be if you missed out on that kind of a cuddle on the guy you don't know that stands next to you, you can't buy that. And as soon as there's a time like that, I just think you'll be thankful that all this madness is behind us. I just personally really miss going to an away day, and I miss the kind of midweek games and stuff. I just can't wait for it to go back, and certainly... it's probably fueled my fire to get back to it. So I'm probably the opposite of you, Andy. I'm scunnered to, I kind of try to structure my week, my working life around going to the games, particularly with my wee boy, with Ben. He chips a year off me, he go everywhere, and I just can't wait to get back. And I think as much as I enjoyed the Scotland game in the house, and it was a really different kind of atmosphere, and well, not atmosphere, a different kind of a feeling spending it just me and Ben in the house, but I would do anything to have been able to be over in Serbia, or if it had been at Hampden, to even enjoy the penalty shootout against Israel. It just doesn't have the same feeling for me sitting in the living room watching it.
Let's wrap up on Scotland. Declan Gallagher and Stephen O'Donnell both featuring and putting in fantastic performances. Asmodee players as Scotland qualify for the first major competition in 22 years. Scott, you've given your opinion on it. Andy, I'll take yours now. It was a torturous 120 minutes, I think would be fairly accurate in saying, and then followed by the agony of penalties. And so many times we've come close and come up short. There's been plenty of times where we've been a downright embarrassment. Sometimes it's been bad decisions that go against us. Sometimes it's bad luck. There's so many factors that have come into play over those 22 years of nothingness, I guess. And to have it all ended in such dramatic fashion, it was a remarkable night. And I think we should rightfully be proud as well of the fact that we had two players in that Scotland starting 11. Two players that are now considered as regulars for the national team as well. It was a fantastic night. And as someone who fell away somewhat from going to the Scotland games, and yes, I would still always watch Scotland on the television, but only going to games here and there, I did feel as we went on, and maybe the fact that it was behind closed doors games as well, I felt like I was in the same boat as everyone else for these kind of poor games against Israel and the 1-1 game, and then the Czech Republic B side almost taking at least a share of the spoils against us. But then the momentum gradually built, and albeit the Israel game wasn't fantastic, to win in penalties, it created that buzz about the Serbia game. And to win the way we did was absolutely fantastic. Yes, there was obviously the disappointment that followed against Slovakia and then not managing to top the group after losing to Israel. But it was a fantastic international break, and very rarely have I said that in recent times. We've now got a major championship to look forward to. And fingers crossed, all being well, Stephen O'Donnell extends his stay at Fir Park. Declan Gallagher, we can bend off some potential suitors for him. And we'll have two Motherwell players playing for Scotland at a major tournament. It's a remarkable thing to say, and it's a fantastic achievement and one that we should enjoy.
You've covered kind of quite a bit there. Can I try and break it down? The Serbia game itself, I wouldn't really say it was a torturous 125 minutes. It was maybe a torturous 30 minutes. I thought we were comfortably the better team in the kind of regulation 90. It's just so unfortunate that we conceded so close to full time. Had we won it in normal time, it would have been totally deserved, I felt. Great character showing to kind of hang in there when Serbia did get on top, and it was such a precarious position that you knew if you conceded that we're not a team that scores a huge amount of goals, as was kind of evidenced in the two games thereafter. But you kind of feared for us getting back into it. But to hang on in there, to win it in such a fashion was fantastic. And the lift it gave everybody in the country was most people in the country was fantastic. So the mood was buoyant, and you know, rightly so after such a long time away from a finals. And it gives everybody something to aim for. Even you've seen, as we've discussed already, you know, there's players that are kinda you wouldn't ordinarily consider having international aspirations or having the question asked of them. Do you think you can make the squad? And you know, it's another thing for some players to aim for. In terms of our involvement, I had a bit of a chuckle with that. I kind of contribute to a kind of Scotland magazine, the Scotland Epistles, and funnily enough, I was asked to sort of do a piece in, you know, Motherwell players' involvement, and this would have been about March, so you know, around about the kind of time where you know the pandemic was kicking in, and I'm kind of writing this big long tale of woe about how Motherwell players have rarely been trusted by the kind of Scotland managers of old, and how we'd
barely have players involved. They're in there for half a dozen games, then get sold on, or they get a couple of games at the tail end of their careers if they've performed elsewhere. And, you know, to suddenly within a matter of months, you've got, as you say, you've got two more old players there that are getting towards the kind of mainstay of the team is quite something. I mean, Gallagher, that's some kind of story when you consider that it's not so very long ago, and it's only relatively recently that he's been introduced to the international team anyway. But for him to go for, I mean, he must have been something like fifth, sixth choice centre-half at one stage, and he's right in there as kind of, you know, building your defence round about him almost. It was the superlatives were flowing for the commentators in the games he was involved in. And, you know, that's fantastic. Whether they both actually still have Motherwell whenever they're listed in the squad, whenever the time comes, I kind of have my doubts now that the publicity that they're both receiving. But for us to sort of be involved in that and have that extra connection with the fact that, you know, they're Motherwell players was fantastic. And the kind of Scotland thing, on a kind of more general note, it does illustrate the games that follow thereafter, is that we do have a bit to go yet. I can understand that there's been a wee bit of emotional burnout, you know, a bit of a drain after the events in Serbia, but it ultimately ended in quite a disappointing note, the international week, both with the under-21s missing the opportunity to qualify and the national team failing to win the Nations League group. And it makes World Cup qualification that be a bit more problematic now. Had we had won that through initially, you know, winning the first of the last two games there, then there was a good chance that we would have had the fallback position that enabled us to qualify for the European Championships in the first place for the World Cup. So we've got potentially difficult times to come, but the hope would be that we continue to develop. There's a period of time between now and the championships themselves and the World Cup draw, which I think is due in a couple of weeks. So we'll see how it goes for that. But ultimately, that's kind of, at the moment, you have to kind of put that all in context in terms of how we've qualified. And it's a wee bit churlish to be whinging about that we didn't get secure a playoffs place when you've just made a finals again for the first time in two decades. So, well, congratulations to all concerned there, and, you know, it's something for us to be excited and hopeful about for next summer.
I think the thing that I took away from it as well was the, although none of us were at the game, nobody was at the game, the connection that you almost felt with the players, because I just think the scenes after it, we all know the songs that have been sung and the way that the players were enjoying it, and your days and end are kind of social media clips and people out and with bagpipes out in the roofs. You just seen what it did bring to every community in Scotland. It really was a kind of a time during, we'll probably look back after this whole lockdown period and think about that, particularly that Thursday night, that was just, it was brilliant.
Yeah, it most certainly was. And it's one that, I think, as you say, it's a great example of how football can bring people together. There's always so many negative bits from the press when it comes to football fans and their actions. Well, I think the whole country enjoyed that en masse. And it was great to see. And fingers crossed, we can now look forward to next summer and have some of that togetherness on a larger scale where people are able to at least mix and enjoy what comes and end that 22-year wait with fans inside the stadium. That would be absolutely fantastic. Guys, I think that's pretty much all we've got for this week. I did say it would be a bit shorter than normal. It's actually ran about 3 or 4 minutes over, so there we go. Thank you very much for your time tonight.
Pleasure.
You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back following this Saturday St Johnstone game. Until then, thank you and goodbye.
always empty. Life ain't 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 always empty. Don't get stuck in the past. Say your favourite things at mass. Tell your mother that you love her. I go out of your way for others. Sit beneath a light that suits you and look forward to a brighter future. Life ain't always empty. 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 Sink as far down as you could be pulled up. Happiness really ain't all about luck. Let your demeanor be your deep down self. And don't sacrifice your life for your health. When you speak, speak sincere. And believe me friend, everyone will hear. Life ain't always empty. 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 Never borrow them from someone else. Buy yourself a flower every hundredth error. Throw your hair down from your lonely terror. And if you hide yourself in the family way, give the kid more than what you got in your day. Life ain't always empty. 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 Tell you what you got time for. It only goes around, goes around, goes around. Take a family name for your own great sins. Cause each day is where it all begins. And don't give up too quick. You only get one line, you better make it stick. If we give ourselves to every breath, then we're all in the runner for a hero's death. Life ain't always empty. 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 Life ain't always empty.